Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, December 18th, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Community at Risk of Closing. Good Samaritan Inn asks Good Samaritans to help raise funds. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Good Samaritan Inn needs to raise $410,000 by June. Rising costs have depleted the organization's financial reserves, and without significant financial support, the organization and its programs face closure. Good Samaritan Inn opened in 1982. Unfortunately, many people do not understand that the funds raised from the WSOY Community Food Drive are specifically for the purchase of food, either for a pantry or for a feeding program like the Good Samaritan, said Lindsay Romano of WSOY. We promise our donors that every dollar goes to the purchase of food. Good Samaritan's share of the $867,776 raised by the Community Food Drive in October will fulfill about 75% of the organization's food budget, Romano said. However, there are additional expenses beyond food, like salaries, utilities, insurance, permits, and licenses. And those costs have gone up, said Tanya Melendez, executive director. Good Samaritan depends on donations to pay those expenses. Over the past year, the organization has seen a steady rise in the number of people seeking meals and support, reflecting increasing levels of food security across Macon County. At the same time, the costs associated with delivering these essential services have grown substantially. Because the Good Samaritan Inn does not receive state or federal funding, the organization relies entirely on local generosity to sustain its mission. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the organization received emergency federal funds that covered the gap. But without those funds, there is no reserve left, Melendez said. Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've been using those reserves to cover monthly shortfalls. And it's really only because we're about to run out of money, I have significantly questioned everything, she said. Since I started 1.5 years ago, I've been working on diversifying funding streams, grants, foundations, and they just have not been successful. We are at a point where, as an organization, we not only need to continue looking for other funding sources, we need to improve funding systems to be more competitive in the grant and foundation landscape, and reevaluate our mission and programs to make sure everything is aligned and that we know where we are headed in terms of long-term sustainability and strategy perspective. The hope is that Good Samaritan will be able to find a way to continue operations, Melendez said. If community is unable to provide the support we need, the next step would be to reduce the number of days we're open, or putting a cap on the number of individuals we're able to feed, she said. If we are unable to receive the short-term support from the community, in addition to the inability to receive additional funding, we are at risk of closing. People depend on Good Samaritan, its meals, and the Mercy Garden, which grows many of the vegetables used in those meals, provides job skills for people that Good Samaritan serves, and hires 2 students from Decatur Public Schools Ag Academy every summer to work in the garden. During the meal served on Tuesday, Amy Scribner sat down to eat a lunch, as she is used to almost every day. It gives me a balanced meal, and it gets me out since I walk here, Scribner said. It's definitely a positive in my life. Anthony Gray finished his meal next to Scribner and added, they need more places like this. 3 full-color photographs accompany this article. The photos are attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first is captioned, Amy Scribner eats a lunch during the noon meal program at Good Samaritan Inn in Decatur on Tuesday, December 16th. It gives me a balanced meal, and it gets me out since I walk here, said Scribner, who attends almost every day. It's definitely a positive in my life. The second photo is behind the serving counter and is captioned, Virginia and Thomas McQuiston, volunteers from First United Methodist Church, serve meals for the noon meal program at Good Samaritan Inn in Decatur on Tuesday, December 16. And the third photo, which shows a man and a small child, is captioned, Michael Dandy and Lania, two, sit down to eat at the Good Samaritan Inn's noon meal program in Decatur on Tuesday, December 16, 2025. Decatur Schools, Board sets $40 million levy, a 4% hike, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Decatur Public Schools Board voted Tuesday night to approve a $40 million property tax levy, and while it is 4% higher than the previous year, the increase was less than some of the options considered. During the Truth in Taxation hearing, prior to the board meeting, District Chief Operational Officer Mike Curry presented several options to the board, ranging from increases as high as 6.63% to a low of 0.5%. The 2024 levy for taxes payable in 2025 was about $38 million. A 2025 levy of $40 million for taxes payable in 2026 may carry a tax rate of $4.59 per $100 equalized assessed valuation to $4.62 per $100 EAV, but those are only estimates until the EAV is settled. In preparing for the levy each year, the board asks Curry for a range of options based in part on projections for the value of taxable property in the district, the equalized assessed value, that won't be finalized until February. The district's EAV was $969 million as of December 5th, but dropped by $500,000 as of December 12th, Curry said. Board members, however, said they were not comfortable with a percentage increase of more than 4%, and community members who spoke during that hearing objected to another increase. With a 4% increase, the owner of a typical $150,000 home likely would pay approximately $2,068 in property taxes for the schools, Curry said. A home's value is divided by three, and then the homestead exemption is applied if it's the primary residence before taxes are assessed. After the board made it clear during the Truth in Taxation hearing that members would not support a large increase, Curry went to his office to rewrite the tax levy resolution based on the 4% they said they would report. In other business, the board approved a three-year contract with Elizabeth Lang to take over as director of the Macon Piatt Special Education District, after the retirement of current director Kathy Horath on June 30, 2026. Lang will earn $157,751 the first year, and the board will determine salary for two subsequent years. Lang holds a master's degree in special education from the University of Illinois Urbana and has served as assistant director of Macon Piatt since 2024. She was a special education administrator for Macon Piatt from 2023 to 2024 and worked as assistant director of Champaign School and as a special education teacher in that district. I've got big shoes to fill, Lang said when the board asked her to come forward to speak. The board also approved a renewal of the $54,043.60 annual contract with Raptor Technologies, and an additional agreement with the company to provide badge alerts at a cost of $125,000. These badges will allow all staff members to raise the alarm electronically if there is an intruder anywhere on school property or if there is a medical emergency, said Vladimir Talley Jr., Safety and Security Administrator for the district. The badges will be able to pinpoint the exact location of the emergency and notify school personnel and emergency services. Several states already mandate such badges, Talley said, and with the recent spate of active shooter events, The badges will increase safety and security on all Decatur Public Schools property. Pending legislation in Illinois would require the badges for all school personnel. Board members also discussed the resumption of the Roadmap 2030 process to create a new strategic plan for the district. And Superintendent Rochelle Clark said she wants to ensure that community members and all staff all have a voice in the process. She suggested a first meeting to be held on January 28th. Further information will be announced shortly. Congress. House GOP force vote on ACA credits. Speaker Johnson defied by fellow Republicans on health care subsidies. By Kevin Freaking, Associated Press, Washington. Four centrist Republicans broke with Speaker Mike Johnson on Wednesday and joined a Democratic-led petition that will force a House vote on extending an enhanced pandemic-era subsidy that lowers health insurance costs for millions of Americans for 3 years. The stunning move comes after House Republican leaders pushed ahead with a health care bill that doesn't address the soaring monthly premiums that millions of people will soon endure when the tax credits for those who buy insurance through the Affordable Health Care Act expire at year's end. Democrats led by Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York needed 218 signatures to force a floor vote on their bill, which would extend the subsidies for 3 years if passed. Republican Representatives Brian Fitzpatrick, Robert Bresnahan, and Ryan McKenzie, all from Pennsylvania, and Mike Lawler of New York signed on Wednesday morning, pushing it to 218. A vote on the subsidy bill could come as soon as January under House rules. Unfortunately, it is House leadership themselves that have forced this outcome, Fitzpatrick said in a statement. Even if the subsidy bill were to pass the House, which is far from assured, it would face an arduous climb in the Republican-led Senate. Republican revolt. The revolt against GOP leadership came after days of talk centered on the health care subsidies. Johnson, Republican Louisiana, discussed allowing more politically vulnerable GOP lawmakers a chance to vote on bills that would temporarily extend the subsidies, while also adding changes such as income caps for beneficiaries. After days of discussion, the leadership sided with the more conservative wing of the party's conference, which assailed the subsidies as propping up a failed marketplace through the ACA, widely known as Obamacare. On Wednesday, House Republicans pushed ahead with a 100-plus page health care package without the subsidies, instead focusing on long-sought GOP proposals designed to expand insurance coverage options for small businesses and the self-employed. Fitzpatrick and Lawler tried to add a temporary extension of the subsidies to the bill, but were denied. Our only request was a floor vote on this compromise so that the American people's voice could be heard on this issue. That request was rejected. Then, at the request of House leadership, I, along with my colleagues, filed multiple amendments and testified at length to those amendments, Fitzpatrick said. House leadership then decided to reject every single one of these amendments. As I've stated many times before, the only policy that is worse than a clean 3-year extension without any reforms is a policy of complete expiration without any bridge, Fitzpatrick said. Lawler, in a social media post, similarly said that the failure of leadership to permit a vote had left him with no choice but to sign the petition. He urged Johnson to bring the plan up for an immediate floor vote. Path ahead uncertain. Last week, Republicans in the Senate voted down a 3-year extension of the subsidies and proposed an alternative that also failed. But in an encouraging sign for Democrats, 4 Republican senators crossed party lines to support their proposal. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican, South Dakota, argued against the Democratic extension as an attempt to disguise the real impact of Obamacare's spiraling health care costs. Macon County Sheriff's Office. Cop accused of fleeing. arrested deputy also charged with speeding. By Tony Reed, Maroa. A Macon County sheriff's deputy has been arrested after a vehicle pursuit near Forsyth and booked on charges of fleeing and attempting to elude police and speeding. A news release from the sheriff's office named the arrested officer as Deputy Andrew Ziegler, 31, who lives in Maroa. Sheriff's office spokesman Lieutenant Scott Flannery said a deputy on duty had spotted a vehicle northbound on US 51 near Forsyth at a high rate of speed around 2 a.m. Monday. Due to the snow and ice-covered roadway, the deputy did not initially pursue the vehicle, but followed in the direction the speeding vehicle was traveling, said Flannery. Just north of Forsyth, the deputy located the vehicle driving in the center median of US 51 and attempted to initiate a traffic stop. The vehicle refused to stop, exited the median, and began traveling southbound on US 51. The deputy again attempted to stop the vehicle when it slid into the median again. Flannery said the pursued vehicle managed to drive out of the median area and sped off northbound. The deputy then broke off the pursuit over concern for the slick driving conditions, but other officers soon found the pursued vehicle stuck in a ditch on Washington Street Road, about a half mile west of US 51. There, the driver was taken into custody for speeding and fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer, Flannery said. He was also held on suspicion of driving under the influence. The driver was identified as 31-year-old Andrew Ziegler of Maroa. Maroa County Circuit Court records show that Ziegler's e-citation for traffic offenses was processed the same day as his arrest. He is scheduled to appear in court in person February 11th, and Macon County State's Attorney Diane Corey has requested the appointment of a special prosecutor to handle the case. Flannery said Illinois State Police were called in to handle a separate allegation accusing Ziegler of driving under the influence. Mr. Ziegler was ultimately charged by the Illinois State Police with driving under the influence, Flannery added. He was cited and released with a pending court date. Court records checked by the Herald and Review, however, only show the speeding and fleeing charges so far. Ziegler is now on paid administrative leave pending the results of an internal investigation by the sheriff's office. Hyundai, Kia to fix millions of vehicles, by Jack Dura, Associated Press. Automakers Hyundai and Kia must offer free repairs to millions of models under a settlement announced Tuesday by Minnesota's Attorney General, who led an effort by dozens of states that argued the vehicles weren't equipped with proper anti-theft technology, leaving them vulnerable to thefts. Under the nationwide settlement, the companies will offer a free repair to all eligible vehicles at a cost that could top $500 million. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison said. Hyundai and Kia must also outfit all future vehicles sold in the U.S. with a key piece of technology called an engine immobilizer and pay up to $4.5 million of restitution to people whose vehicles were damaged by thieves. The settlement was reached by 35 states, including California, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. The vehicles eligible for fixes date back as far back as 2011 and as recently as 2022. About 9 million eligible vehicles were sold nationwide. Thefts of Hyundai and Kia vehicles soared in part because beginning in 2021, vehicles posted to TikTok and other social media demonstrated how someone could steal a car with just a screwdriver and a USB cable. Minneapolis reported an 836% increase in Hyundai and Kia thefts from 2021 to 2022. Ellison announced an investigation into the automakers in early 2023. Ellison said the two companies installed engine immobilizers on cars sold in Mexico and Canada, but not widely in the U.S., leading to car thefts, crimes, and crashes that injured and even killed people, including teenagers. This crisis that we're talking about today started in a boardroom, traveled through the internet, and ended up in tragic results when somebody stole those cars, Ellison said at a news conference. He was joined by Twin Cities officials, a woman whose mother was killed when a stolen Kia crashed into her parents' vehicle, and a man whose car was stolen 9 times as recently as Monday night, including 7 times after a previous software fix. Under the settlement, Hyundai and Kia will install a zinc sleeve to stop would-be thieves from cracking open a vehicle's ignition cylinder and starting the car. Eligible customers will have 1 year from the date of the company's notice to get the repair at an authorized dealership. The repairs are expected to be available from early 2026 through early 2027. In separate statements, the automakers said the agreement is one of multiple anti-theft efforts they took to help customers. Man Gets Prison for Cruelty in Cat Killing by Tony Reed, Decatur. The Decatur man who throttled a cat to death, burned its face with a blowtorch-style lighter when confronted by police, and then used the dead feline's body as a club to beat the officers trying to arrest him, has been sent to prison for 2 years. Justin S. Shadwell, 42, pleaded guilty in Macon County Circuit Court December 9th to a charge of aggravated cruelty. The plea was part of a plea deal that saw an additional cruelty charge and a charge of resisting police dismissed by Judge Jeffrey Geisler. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers had been called to the 1600 block of East Grand Avenue on the afternoon of October 25th by a witness who said Shadwell was holding on to a black cat that appeared to be struggling to get away. The witness is then quoted as telling police she had later seen Shadwell strangling the cat with one hand clamped around its neck. Officer Joseph Oberheim, who signed the affidavit, said Shadwell was holding the cat's limp, dead body when police arrived. Shadwell claimed the pet was asleep, not dead, and belonged to him, although he refused to divulge its name when asked. Justin then started to light the cat's face on fire with a lighter while the officers were speaking to him, Oberheim said. Officers gave a lawful order to Justin to put the cat down multiple times due to him continuing to light the cat's face on fire. Justin failed to obey verbal commands, forcing officers to go hands-on. Officers broke contact from Justin due to him continuing to hit an officer with the dead cat. Oberheim said police finally shot Shadwell with a stun gun and then arrested him after a foot chase. In earlier hearings in the case, Chief Public Defender Michelle Sanders had described the defendant as having a long history of mental illness. She said she believed he was having a mental health crisis on the day he had attacked the cat and abused its dead body. Tariffs have uneven effect on holiday prices by Mae Anderson, Associated Press, New York. The Ah Lewis store in San Luis Obispo, California, turns into a winter wonderland every holiday season. Green garlands, giant nutcrackers, baubles, and bows go up in early November on the historic downtown building that houses the gift shop. Inside, customers can choose from over 500 different types of ornaments and a variety of holiday gift baskets. We really just make it a magical spot, co-owner Emily Butler said. Whether you come in or not, we want to make sure that we're spreading that holiday joy. But Butler says she and her twin sister business partner had to work harder this year to turn browsers into buyers and make a profit. Many of the decorations and stocking stuffers they sell are made overseas and either did not arrive or got more expensive when President Donald Trump imposed unusually high taxes on imported goods, she said. In response, the sisters focused their selection on more profitable items, such as nutcrackers and gift baskets. They've also noticed customers cutting back, selecting a $100 gift basket over the $150 version, or buying one ornament instead of several, Butler said. We're definitely seeing more cautious spending this year, she said. along with the unpredictable tariffs, stubborn inflation, and weak hiring have shaken consumer confidence in the U.S. economy. The vast majority of U.S. adults say they've noticed higher than usual prices for groceries, electricity, and holiday gifts in recent months, according to a December poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. A Gallup index that summarizes Americans' assessments of current economic conditions fell to a 17-month low in November. Consumers also showed less enthusiasm for spending money on holiday gifts. Their estimated gift budgets decreased by $229 between October and November, the largest drop Gallup has recorded at that point in the holiday shopping season. The survey was conducted in November, partially during the government shutdown, which might have tempered spending plans. However, the worst-case impact on consumer prices that many economists foresaw from the Trump administration's tariff policies hadn't materialized. Some products have been affected more than others. Games and toys were particularly susceptible to tariff-related price increases, as the majority of those sold in the U.S. are made in China, according to industry trade group the Toy Association. The tariff rate the Trump administration imposed on Chinese goods became a roller coaster that started at an additional 10%, peaked at 145%, and ended up at 47%. The uncertainty made it hard for toy shops to decide what to order for the holidays. Dean Smith, who co-owns independent toy stores Jazams in Princeton, New Jersey, and Lahaska, Pennsylvania, said the manufacturers in China that he buys toys from did not pass on their tariff costs all at once, but he has seen their prices inch higher with every reorder. Public safety. Dog dies in Decatur house fire. Decatur. A dog died in a Decatur house fire that badly damaged a house in the 1700 block of East Lotus Street late Monday night. A report from Decatur Fire Chief Neil Elder said his crews were alerted to the blaze at 11:33 p.m. and arrived to find heavy smoke conditions and a large volume of fire on the inside and outside of the residence. Elder said bystanders feared there was a person still inside the house, and firefighters immediately initiated an interior fire attack while conducting an intensive search for victims. A thorough search of the structure confirmed that the only occupant inside was a dog, which unfortunately succumbed to fire-related injuries, Elder added. The cause of the blaze remains under investigation by the fire department's Fire Prevention Bureau. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, December 18th, 2025. Please stay tuned.